Thank you so much for leading us. It's great. Good morning. Hey, my name's Tim. If you're new with us or refuse to pay attention, I'm the lead pastor here, and it's great to be with you this morning. We just a few things. If you didn't realize what we've just done, this is we're a little bit out of our normal. If we have a rhythm, whatever that normal rhythm is, we're doing something slightly different, and we've just. We've sung a number of songs together, and we've taken communion together, and we've declared together this morning that God loves us and has created us, that we need Jesus, and then we actually went through this practice of, and we did great. I mean, to be able to pick up these little cups and transport them back to our seats, and if you just out of habit mistakenly dipped into your little cup, that's totally fine. But we took communion together, which tells the story and teaches us yet again and reminds us again of Jesus' great love for us and his sacrifice for us on the cross. And so if you're here and you're not a follower of Jesus, or maybe you're struggling with your belief or what faith looks like for you, we're so glad that you're here. But this is what we do on a regular basis, is get together and celebrate who Jesus is and what he's done for us, and that we're changed, we're formed by him. We're in the middle of a series we started a couple weeks ago called Where Jesus Goes, and it's meant to address questions, doubts, and uncertainties that we have, and we're going to take a break from that this week, but pick it up again next week. And so coming out of Easter, which happened to land on April Fool's Day this year, we decided to come out of Easter and deal with something that affects all of us. Either it has already, it is currently, or it will in the future, that we have questions about God, about Jesus, about what it means to follow him in this world, where he connects to this world. And the reality is, as we see in Scripture, that Jesus goes into those places with us. He's already there. We're not surprising him by our questions. And we want to create an environment, and we want to be a church family that is safe to ask and pursue those questions and demonstrate a big and growing and deepening faith that says, I can't answer everything right now, God, but you're going to meet me in it, and you're going to walk with me, and you're going to show me. And so that's what we hope is happening and will continue to happen. But we're taking a pause from that series, and we'll pick up in the next coming weeks. We're going to address science 1 week, which will be easy. We'll cover all that in 1 week. And then pain and suffering, another easy one. The exclusivity of Jesus. What does it mean that Jesus says he's the only way, and him's the way, the truth, and the life? And what does that mean for all the other faith systems that exist in our world and have existed and people will create in the future? And what does that mean? And a couple other topics that I'm not remembering right now, but that's kind of where we're headed in the next few weeks. We want to take a pause right now, and this is really an important Sunday in the life of our church. I want to talk with you about where we believe God's leading us as a church, and we want to put some vision in front of us. Not a lot of it will be new, but to be really clear about a few things. We believe that God's moving in a great way and a new way among us, and if you've been around, hopefully you have a sense of that. You can feel that in some way, even if you can't point to some specific things. We've been celebrating over the last number of weeks that people are coming to faith, and not just in this room, but through relationships that we have in our life, out where we live and work and go to school, that God's put us in relationships with people and family and friends and fellow students and coworkers, and we're seeing people come to faith. We had a number of baptisms. I think we had 9 on Easter a few weeks ago, further evidence of God working. We're seeing people being discipled and grow in their faith and discipleship huddles in our church, and something that we've dreamed and prayed about for a number of years and are so excited. And so what I want to do today is just talk through 3 areas that we believe God's calling us to. And one of the things that we say about ourselves and refer to ourselves, and it's intentional. It doesn't just happen accidentally. It's very intentional that we refer to ourselves as a church family. And there's a lot of ways to talk about the church. There's a lot of ways to talk about our church. There's a lot of ways to talk about Mosaic. But when we say a family, we mean certain things. And I want to read a few verses that are some of the best verses ever written, and they capture really well when it comes to who the church is, who we are as followers of Jesus in the world today. And maybe they're really common to you, or maybe you've never heard these before, but right as things get going, after Jesus is resurrected from the dead and his followers meet him, the resurrected Jesus, and he begins to send them out, radical things begin to happen. These are the very first church that we begin to see. And it's in Acts chapter 2, verses 42 through 47. Just listen to these verses. They may be up on the screen behind me, but listen to these. And again, you may have heard these before, but listen carefully. They, being the first followers of Jesus, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and the signs performed by the apostles. Stuff was happening. Stuff was going on. Crazy things were happening. Miracles were happening. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. That wasn't their church building, by the way. They didn't own that any longer. That was a little bit of a foreign territory to them, although they knew it. But the temple courts weren't dedicated to Jesus. They were meeting in somebody else's space at that point. They broke bread in their homes, and they ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. There's a ton packed into there, but what we see is the forming of the first church. And it's a family. It's people who shared life together and spent time together. It was people who were dedicated to God and allowing who Jesus was to shape who they were. And it says the apostles' teaching, they were being shaped by who Jesus was. They shared their belongings and cared for one another. They wanted to make sure nobody had need, that they were taken care of as they began to be a community, a family. And then they had eyes for and were concerned about those who were on, if I can say this, the outside, who didn't know Jesus yet. And it says God was adding to their number daily, that the people who were far from Jesus began to see who they were and how they lived. When we talk about being a church family, that's part of the picture of it. That's kind of what's held out in front of us, is we want to be that kind of people. And so today I want to share three things where I believe God's leading us. You need to know that your leaders here, from volunteers to staff to the ministry board, has been praying about this and where God is leading us as a church, and to talk through three specific areas, and a few others are going to join me up here for part of that as well. But the first one is this, neighborhood communities. We've been talking about this for a little while, and we've been experimenting a little bit, and we've tried, and actually we've been experimenting for a couple years and had some kind of fits and starts and some, oh, that didn't work, and okay, what about this? And over the last several months, we've seen kind of some traction begin to take place, and really a little bit of momentum, and if I can say this too, some fruit. We're seeing God bless kind of our efforts, and so I want to talk just what we mean when we say this. We've thrown out this, and maybe you've popped into one and gotten a little taste of it. Maybe you just heard us talk about it, and you're not quite sure what this is. Maybe you're in another kind of group here at Mosaic, and you're like, wait, I'm so confused. There's so many different names. So that's why we're talking about it this morning. We started trying out something new because our city is changing. And we all know this. We know that Portland is changing. And not that Portland has ever been static in any way, shape, or form. It's always been on the edge of culture and experimenting and being different in some way. It's part of just our very fiber and goes back to the very history of who we are as a city. But Portland is continuing to change. And some of us love that, and some of us hate that, and some of us both love and hate that. But our city is growing. It's expanding, both size. It's getting taller. It's spreading. It's packing in tighter. We're growing in terms of number of people. We've completely lost the ability to drive in any sort of efficient, speedy manner. And we're just a different city. And that means something, that we want to be a church that's changing to engage our city. Part of that change also we feel in our schedules. And so whether you're single, whether you're a couple or married with no kids, or whether your parents together with somebody else, or a single parent, regardless of your age, something has happened in our city over the last number of years where we've just gotten busier. We've gotten busier, and time is more of a commodity, and it's harder to fit things in, and we've just gotten busier as a city. We've gotten busier as a church family. And because of those two realities, that we're changing, and our city's changing, and the culture of what shapes how people think in our city is changing, and we're becoming busier, we begin to look at how are we connecting as a church family? How are we engaging in friendships and relationships? How are we experiencing that family part of who we are? And it was getting more and more challenging and difficult. And so we begin to dream about, what do we really want to see when we get together outside of this building? What do we dream about when we as friends and family, as a church, get together outside of this time in our Sunday gatherings? And one of the things that we dreamed about is that wherever we live across our city, that we're close to other people who call Mosaic home. that we have a sense of community where we are, that we don't have to drive across the city, which is getting more challenging, that there's a sense of there's somebody I know that's near me. And so we've kind of set out there, what would it be like if we had some kind of community that was gathering together with some sort of rhythm and regularity within 5 to maybe at the outside limit of 10 minutes to where each of us live? And that might seem really odd to you, but what if there was a piece of the Mosaic Church family that was near each and every one of us, regardless of where we live? It's so easy to think, oh, I'm a part of a church that's marked by the building itself. And certainly a number of us live within 5 or 10 minutes of this particular building, but many, and in fact, most of us don't. We live all spread out around the metro area, Westside, Vancouver, Gresham, Clackamas, Happy Valley, Oregon City, Milwaukee. We're all over the place. And so what would it look like to be a people that considers himself family, but still has a sense of mission where they are planted, where they live, where they do life? And so that became part of the dream. What if we became a place that had a natural next step for people in our life who don't know Jesus? And again, if you're here and you don't know Jesus, we're really glad that you're here. And if I can just pay you a compliment, way to be courageous to step into this kind of an experience. We just instinctively know and feel that for our friends and family and neighbor and coworkers who don't know Jesus, to enter into this kind of conversation, hey, would you like to come to church with me? Oh, sure. Is Easter coming up? No, it's just Sunday's coming up. Huh. Okay. I mean, that's kind of like, that's a big conversation. That's a big risk. It's actually odd. That's not normal. Most of us are fairly uncomfortable with it. And if we're honest, very few of us have done that on a regular basis. Hey, do you want to come to church with me? But what if we said, hey, do you want to come over to my house and hang out? What if you want to come over to my friend's house and hang out? We want to create a place, a context where it's natural to invite people that don't know Jesus. The other thing that we dream about is having a context, a place to be together that's multi-generational, that's not segmented by our maybe affinity group or age or place in life. And we've done that, and we'll continue to do that. And the church has done that in the last number of generations very efficiently and effectively, and it's a good thing. But we've realized that part of our dream, part of what we're longing for, is to be in relationships with people who don't look like us and aren't in the same place. And it's not just a longing, I would say it's a need, that we need to be with people who are not our same age. As we've stepped into neighborhood communities, as we start to taste that and experience it, there's something that's rich and deep and just enjoyable. Adam's going to share a little bit more about that in just a moment. We also dream about people that, where they are in their neighborhood, they're serving in some way, that they're making a difference. The other thing that is compelling us to move forward in this way is that the reality is of the church in the United States of America, the church in our country, this is fresh statistics that just came out this past year. 4%, 4 out of every 100 churches in our nation, 4, ever multiply or reproduce. 4 out of 100 churches in our nation ever plant another church. If you've been around Mosaic any amount of time, you know that that is in our DNA. It's in our story. It's part of who we're called to be as a church planting church. In 14 plus years, we've planted 6 churches. We don't want to look back and go and celebrate that alone and have our story going forward gradually moving into one of those 96%. We want to stay in the 4% that continues to plant. And we think this is a way to do it, to continue to multiply and reproduce. So that's a little bit of the why and what we hope to see. Adam's going to kind of share what that looks like specifically, where we're at right now as a church in kind of stepping in and experimenting with this. And then what are some next steps that we're looking at?
Yeah. Thanks, Tim.
Yeah.
I think it's appropriate to say that neighborhood communities has come from a response of our changing city and of this desire to be present in our neighborhoods and to take our community and make it visible in our city. In fact, a few years ago, we came up with this vision statement that says this: we see a church family united across our city in communities where people can experience following Jesus together. These communities are large enough to have a party, small enough to be known, and ready to act in a way that makes a difference. And so this is really where neighborhood communities has come from. And to describe what makes a neighborhood community or kind of what that experience is, there's really three elements to go into it. First is some kind of leadership core within that community. These are the people who own the rhythm, who own the experience, who are communicating, and who are really stepping into that space intentionally. This happens really well with huddles, if huddles are part of that core or life groups are part of that core. And what they get to do is set the rhythm and kind of decide how we're going to celebrate, how we're going to be serving. But they step into this intentionally saying, hey, I'm inviting a friend that doesn't know Jesus. Can we be praying for them? Can we make sure they feel welcome and feel at home and be intentional about this relationship? And so really that leadership core is one of the staples of this. The second piece is the consistent rhythm, this consistent monthly rhythm. And I agree with Tim. I like what he said, that the church, how it is now in Portland, is not the church I grew up in, where most people have most evenings free and there's lots of time. And so this consistent rhythm is a monthly rhythm of alternating between serving and celebrating. And these two activities of serving and celebrating are actually really visible and important in our city, and we get to do them and have fun and do it intentionally and create space that's accessible for people to step into. That size of space, we call it social space. And in our church community here, we have areas that we would call personal space, kind of that 6 to 12 people. We experience that in huddles. We experience that in life group, and there's a lot of opportunities for that. We have something called public space, and in fact, you're sitting in it right now. And public space is great. It's there's anonymity. I can step in. I can step out. But it's not always the easiest place to meet people or to make relationships. And so we're seeking to create this kind of middle ground, this social space where it's large enough that I can have some level of anonymity, but it's still accessible. That 25 to 40, 45 range is a great size for a backyard barbecue where I can invite my neighbor and they can meet people and actually experience the wealth of community that we have because we believe in Jesus and we follow Jesus. And that's really an amazing asset that we have in this city is this wealth of community and making that visible and giving people access to that. So that's that consistent rhythm of serving and celebrating. And then the third piece is the missional frontier, the neighborhood or the network of relationships that I would say, hey, this is where I'm sent. This is where I'm called. These are the people that I care about. These are the people that I see consistently. And so that's my neighborhood. That's where I feel called to. And those are the three elements that make neighborhood community: a consistent rhythm, the leadership core, and the missional frontier. And it's been fun. We've been stepping into this for 2 or 3 months now and experimenting and kicking the tires and already have heard some neat stories and seen some great things. The neighborhood community that's out in East Portland, they're east of 82nd. They wanted to have an Easter egg hunt for their neighborhood and ended up hosting it in a park. I think some like 100 people-ish mm-hmm. showed up for it, which is really cool. But in preparation for the Easter egg hunt, they're stuffing Easter eggs. And it's a neighborhood community, so it's the leadership core, but they invited their neighbors and they invited people in their neighborhood. And so they're there stuffing eggs together. And someone mentions something about mosaic to someone, and they look at them and say, "What's a mosaic?" And I was like, that's actually really cool. They're getting to experience this wealth of community without having to take the really large step of walking into a church building. And that's just an amazing thing. And another cool story that we experienced out in the North Portland neighborhood community is we've been praying about, God, how can we serve in our city? Serve uniquely and in a way that's meaningful and in a way that impacts our neighborhood and our neighbors. And we've been able to kind of partner with something called the Free Clothing Exchange that's been really carried along by a particular life group. They've done an amazing job. And they have this clothing exchange that I think that we were talking the other day, over the last 4 or 5 years has been able to resource over 200 people with clothes, a lot of these being refugees. And they do this 4 times a year, and it's only 4 times a year because that's the amount of volunteers that they have. And as a neighborhood community, we got to step in and say, let's dream a little bit bigger about this. What if we were able to own this and do this more often and to expand our services in the city and to take the footprint that they've established and kind of build out on it. And so that's just been something that we're dreaming about and is real exciting. I would love to open this up to our church family this morning. I'm hoping and we're believing that what Tim said, that there is going to be a neighborhood community within 5-10 minutes of where everyone lives. I'm hoping that will be a reality that happens pretty soon. But I can show you where we're starting. If you grab this, response card. Hopefully all you got it on the way in. And flip it over to the back. You'll see a list of our neighborhood communities. We have the east one that I mentioned, which is out east of 82nd. Northeast, southeast, which is Woodstock, Brooklyn, those areas. Clackamas, Tabor Mountain area. North, which is my hood. Vancouver and west side. And then our college group, which was not so much a geographic neighborhood. It's a network of relationships. I would love for you to consider how you can step in and be a part of this. There's a response here to say, I'm interested in getting more info. I'm interested in hosting a neighborhood community. Or I want to share my ideas for how we can uniquely serve in our neighborhood. This is going to be great. I think it's really exciting, and you're not going to want to miss out. And we're going to have an opportunity at the end of the gathering to fill us out and to respond. So be thinking, be praying about it. It's going to be real exciting. Yeah.
Great. Adam, thank you. Adam and I have had the chance to visit with a couple different kind of interested, you know, couples or singles or families that in different neighborhoods, and just to kind of have info nights. And that's again what he mentioned, that some of those are coming up in the next month or so. And to see the response of like, okay, this, I can do this, we can fit. How many families have been that I've talked to that have been around Mosaic for a number of years, and with the age of the kids and the schedule in their life, just can't. A life group doesn't work. A weekly thing is difficult. And so a way to gather and still be known and be in relationship and be on mission, but have it fit into the lives that's actually doable and isn't too much and can't commit to it. And I love that actually, I didn't hear that conversation happen. It was passed along to me afterwards. But I was in the house that night when a newer young family to Mosaic, I think it was the husband, asked the guy he was stuffing eggs with, so how long have you guys been going to Mosaic? And the response was, what's a Mosaic? Which is, like, if you can capture that, if you can get that, if you can, like, that neighbors were invited in, it was a safe, normal, I mean, that's not normal, that's awkward, and he's probably really embarrassed that happened, but I think it's beautiful, I think it's fantastic, and what if that happened more and more, and we created an opportunity, a context, a space to engage the neighbors that we care about and love. And so that's one thing that is a key part of our next chapter as a church and that we're really excited about. Here's the second one, and it's what does it mean to be a church that values the next generation? The story of where we're sitting right now, the fact that we're gathered in a room in a building here in Northeast Portland comes because a church that was here before and built this building and paid for it and lived in it for decades, as they tell the story, they said, we didn't look out around us at the changes that were happening and ask the difficult questions and go through the process of praying and discern and make the difficult decisions to adjust with what was going around us. And so we became increasingly irrelevant to our city, and we saw the younger generation disappear. That's part of the story of how we're even here. And as you know, as you look around our city, there's a growing number of churches that are empty because the church didn't survive in that building. And that's not to dismiss at all the great things that God did in the decades past. But as we're a church and we're responsible for what God's calling us to now, and as we look into the future, we want to ask those tough questions, and we want to make the difficult decisions, and we want to look and say, the younger half of who we are, the next generation of who we are, will be our priority. And so we want to be a church that actually looks and says, this is an important part of us, of who we are. 75% of people who identify as Jesus followers in our nation, 75% of people who identify as followers of Jesus in America came to faith between the ages of 4 and 14. If you're sitting here right now and you came to faith between the ages of 4 and 14, raise your hand. I just counted, and that's exactly 75% of the room. No, I can barely see you, but that's just true. That's just statistics. 75% between the ages of 4 and 14, they came to know Jesus. Another statistic that you need to know alongside of that is that 6 out of 10 of those people, beginning at the age of 15, will leave the church either permanently or for a long period of time. How many of you know somebody who in their teen years or later walked away from Jesus in the church? We want to do something about that. We want to be a church that prioritizes the next generation. And not just says that it's important, but that says we're willing to invest in and sacrifice for the younger half of who we are. Let me say it this way. Let's say that we're a church of people between 0 and 90. And that's really a very important number, because right in the middle of that is 45. And this year I turned 44. So we're between 0 and 90. And so the younger half of us, no, let's just say generally whatever the younger half is, and you can decide what that number is in your own mind for whatever you can handle right now. And for me, that's what it is. But the younger half of us, if I can kind of talk to the older half of us and the younger half, and we're a church that's multi-generational, that spans those decades. And one of the unique things about us is that we are tremendously blessed with an older half of who we are that is spiritually mature, that has continued even in the older quarter of us. I can tell you story upon story upon story of the oldest among us who are continuing to pursue Jesus in ways that make them uncomfortable and stretch them and take them to new depths. That we've been blessed with an older half of who we are as a church that has much to give to the younger half. And I say that full well knowing that we have folks in our church right now who have just come to faith and are in that later half. And that's a great thing, and they need something different. But there's many of us who are in that later half that have something to offer to the younger half. That your life experience of what it means to walk with Jesus, of your lived life, is what those on the younger half need. The other thing that's true about who we are is that as we age, we like to have things go our way. And those of you that are on the, and us, I'll include myself in this, that are on the second half of life, there's always going to be something in us where we long for a church that fits us and makes us comfortable and is perfectly suited for us. And as we talked this week and prayed about today, one of the things that was said that I think is so true, I wish I was the one that said it because I think it's great. I didn't say it. That if you're in the older half of life and you're in a church that perfectly suits you, you're too comfortable and there's something missing. That you should be a little uncomfortable if you're in the second half of life. If it perfectly suits you, you're probably not being stretched and growing. If it perfectly suits you and you're perfectly comfortable, you're probably not sacrificing giving to those in the second half in a way that you're fully equipped to and capable of. Something that's needed from you. There's another thing about what it means to have purpose in your second half of life, and everybody asks that question. And if you're not asking there, it's because you're pushing it out of your brain, and it's a concerted effort to not ask that question. But when you invest in the younger ones around you, even if you feel uncomfortable or not equipped enough or not cool enough or don't have something to offer, when you invest in them, it adds purpose to your own life. It gives you a reason and a focus. It's a way that God blesses you and says, this is how you can make a difference. And so when we make decisions as a church and when we move forward as a church and we say these are going to be our priorities and we're going to prioritize the next generation, for those of you that are on the second half of life that are in this room right now, we're not asking you just to tolerate things that we do, but we're asking you to celebrate them and to invest in them. And to engage in them and ask how you can help and ask why. I had a great experience last week. I had a week off of preaching last week and got to kind of stand in the back rows here and just worship and sing. And at the end of our 11 o'clock gathering, as the last song finished, as we clapped and celebrated and headed out, a woman who's older than me, I'm not going to out her or say her age because I don't know her age, but she's in the second half and maybe in the last third of age-wise of who we are, leaned over to me and said, put her arm around me and just said, I just love being here. I can't help but move around when we sing and worship. And I went, she gets it. I didn't talk to her husband, so I don't know if he got it or not, but she gets it. We want to be a church that makes changes and looks forward and is willing to adjust and change for the next generation. If you're in the the younger half of who we are. I want you to hear a few things from me this morning. One is that we're a multi-generational church that spans the decades, and that's one of God's great gifts to us, and that you have at your fingertips resources available to you to help you live a life for Jesus in this city at this time. It's a great gift God's given to you and to us as a church. The second thing is if you're on the younger half of who we are, you have a role to play here. We need you. We want you. You're invited to play a role. I did a little poll after our week last Sunday morning after our gatherings and said, what were the ages of our worship leaders? We had two worship leaders here in Northeast and two worship leaders in our gathering in North. Here in Northeast, the ages were 23 and 20, and in North, they were 22 and 21. That's fantastic. If you're sitting around and you're like, I'm too young to play a role yet, that's the opposite of the truth. That's a lie. We want you to play a role. We want you to lean in. We want you to be equipped and developed, and we have plenty of ways of doing that. And the third thing I want you to hear is that we're going to prioritize you and invest in you and sacrifice for you if you're on the younger half, and it's for you. But the third thing I want you to hear is that there's also many, many thousands more like you that are in our city who don't know Jesus. And so we want you to grow and develop and love Jesus and be shaped by him. But then we also want you to live on mission where you are, in your classroom, in your place of work, in your neighborhoods, in your own homes, that you're making a difference for Jesus there. And we, if I can say we as the second half, aren't going to be able to reach your peers. We want to equip you to do it and pray you into it. And that takes a lot of sacrifice and giving and change. And we want to be uncomfortable and be willing to do that so that we don't end up like one of the hundreds of churches buildings in our city that isn't alive anymore and isn't growing and changing and pursuing Jesus. One of the changes that we're dreaming about for this next season is with our high school ministry. And I've asked Connor to come and share for a couple minutes about what we're dreaming about and what we're thinking about for this next season as it comes to our high schoolers.
Yeah. If you've been paying attention to the history of youth ministry, which I'm sure you just all finished that textbook that just... You haven't, and that's okay, but I have. And what I've realized is for the past 60 to 70 years, kind of the way that churches reach students has kind of gone largely unchanged. And besides kind of like the new slang or like the new fashion, like the program looks pretty identical. And what we're realizing in cities like ours and in other places in our country and around the world is it just isn't working the same way it used to. And where we see lots of students, and probably the majority of students, who have kind of no experience with a faith community or even know somebody who's a follower of Jesus. And so entering into a program that's maybe kind of the classic youth ministry program is super unfamiliar and is not necessarily even a relevant piece of their lives. And it's convicting to me, but also what I'm realizing that God is doing in my heart and I think in our church is saying that this is too big of an opportunity to just let kind of walk by us or to wait for somebody else to figure it out. And so to hear, Tim, you say those things about wanting to prioritize and sacrifice and believe that God has something bigger for the next generation is really inspiring to me. And it's been really fun to kind of start dreaming about what that could look like. So what, just for our high schoolers, for this really important section of who we are and the city we're a part of, is we want to dream big for them. And we also want to kind of invite them to participate in not just this kind of secluded little population of high schoolers in the church, but rather the church at large. So here's kind of our plan, where we're heading in the fall, is we're going to take some of these kind of same rhythms that Mosaic is investing in, of kind of the neighborhood community space, that social space. And the other piece of that is really intentional discipleship. We've kind of talked about that in something called a discipleship huddle. And we're going to take kind of those things and then kind of reinterpret them or re-envision them for high schoolers, believing that same busyness that applies to many of us as adults is equally impactful upon a high school kid. Every high school student I talk to is balancing like a job or an after-school club or something that's going to look good on their college application or sports team or language immersion. Or like there's a hundred thousand different things for a student to be involved with. And we want to adapt a program that's going to fit into their lives and is also going to be accessible to someone who's a peer of them. The way we're thinking about this for the first time in the fall is to kick off this thing in September. We've got our eye on a really cool space in Inner Southeast that's a coffee shop, and they have this just awesome kind of all glass windows storefront, and then also this kind of rooftop deck, and so to take that space and on a weekend night, like a Sunday night, to invite the high schoolers we know, and then to allow them to invite others who they know to come to a program that's been put together for them and by them, and to start to dream about together what community looks like as high schoolers on mission in the city of Portland. This is a kind of a space that's going to be easily reproducible month to month. Like, we're not going to be tied to a location, like to this building or to a specific neighborhood, but rather get to reinterpret for the landscape of our city. And then also to really put the keys in the hands of our high schoolers for what does it mean to live on mission, what does it mean to serve the city. So not for a bunch of adults to dream up a project for them to own, but instead to say, this is yours, we're going to resource you and equip you, believe in you, and we can back you up however you want, but you know your city, you know your community, and so what does it mean to make a difference intentionally in the name of Jesus for that? So that's kind of one way we're going to start. And then the second kind of huge opportunity I see is what does it look like for adults to be in relationship with high schoolers? And where is that kind of intersection? As we talk about the first half and the second half, there's huge opportunity there that I don't think we're leveraging fully yet. So the second kind of arm of this whole thing is relationships with adults who are following Jesus, and this kind of big word of discipleship. What does it mean to intentionally disciple students? Forever, kind of the model has been you find a willing, able adult, and you partner them up with like 5 to 8 students, and you say, go and like follow Jesus. And you shove them in like a basement or a home or around a ping pong table or at McDonald's or whatever, and you say, do it, figure it out. And that's how I was discipled as a young person, and it worked. And it's probably worked for a lot of us. But the kind of the best current research for maintaining faith in a student through high school and into college and beyond is that it takes more than just one invested adult. The best research actually says that it takes between like 5 and 7 adult relationships, intergenerational relationships outside of your family. That have a place to speak in and invest in one student's life for them to continue following Jesus. So instead of this ratio of kind of 1 adult to 5 students, we actually need to flip that on its head and say we need 5 to 7 invested, caring adults per high school student to check in on them, to ask how they're doing, to walk with them as they follow Jesus. Because, like you said, the statistics are that the majority don't make it through high school. And so you don't have to be a 20-somethings person to do this. You don't have to just be like a 30-something. You don't have to look cool. It's just a matter of showing up. It's really a matter of showing up and letting your life touch the life of another student. So if you've also got on your response card, this guy right here, on the back towards the bottom where it says Next Generations, you have an opportunity to, I think, check a box. To be involved in this effort. We don't have every detail figured out. This is a big shift for just youth ministry in general. And we, instead of waiting for somebody to come up with a great plan and then research it and write a book, we want to say we want to be all in from the beginning and say this is too big of an opportunity to not risk, to not sacrifice, to not try something new. That's for you. That's not something I can do by myself. And we need you to join us on this effort. Yeah.
Awesome. Connor, thank you so much.
Yeah.
The opportunity that we have in front of us to reach high school students is is huge, as Connor just shared, and to step into that messiness. The other thing on that section there is leaders in training. And so just two quick things. One is leaders in training. If you're here, regardless of your age, and you think, I want to be developed to serve in the church for the rest of my life, not vocationally, but just in any way, volunteer to make a difference. Leader in training is a great way to do it, particularly for the next generation leaders, the younger half of who we are. And so that's available. And we're every year in this season, in the spring, we open it up for applications, and those are available now, and you can find that on the website. The other thing is this, that if you're sitting here and you're a parent and you're like, well, I might be in the second half, but I'm still raising my kids. You're doing what we're dreaming of. You're investing in the next generation by being parents of children who are in the younger half of who we are. And for you to raise your hand and go, I need help, I'm giving all I can give here, is totally normal. I'm a parent, and I'm doing that on a regular basis, going, I need help. I can't just give, but I need help raising mine. And so we want to be a church that is resourcing parents consistently and regularly as you're raising the next generation in your home. The last section is this, and I'm way out of time. And so the band's going to come up, and I want to mention generosity. Neighborhood communities, the next generation, and generosity is the last area that God's calling us to grow in. We've kind of grown and then stepped back and then grown in this over the last couple years. And this is really beyond just money, although money is part of it, is what does it mean to be a generous church family that's ready to give and serve and to give away possessions and time and energy at the ready, that we're always have that posture. And what we know of and what Scripture tells us is that often that posture is linked to how we handle our stuff and our finances. And so as we step into the next season of our church, generosity is one of the areas that we want to grow in as a church, and that we readily give away our time and our talents and our resources, but also our money. It's been a while since I shared this, and so I want to share this again. Two quick things. One of my favorite things that I've seen here over the last few years, it was probably 3, maybe 4 years ago, was a young bartender. He's about 27 years old. He came to faith here at Mosaic, and giving was nothing that he even considered before. And his girlfriend explained to him how you give an offering at church and why. And he kind of read the Bible for the first time about giving and showed up here on a Sunday. And because he had never thought about it, he didn't get that that's what the baskets were for. And so that went by and he just missed it and didn't pay attention. But he had come ready to give that first Sunday that he was going to give. And so he came up to me afterwards and he says, hey, what do I do with this? And he had a pile of cash, because he was a bartender and he had taken all of his tips for the week and kept them, and said, here, I'm going to give this, and what do I do with this? And I said, I've never seen this before. Let me find just one of our greeters, and they'll point you to where you can dump it. And that led to a larger conversation. But the fact that was his instinct as he started following Jesus was, okay, this is who he's called me to be. The other thing is this, if this is an area of growth for you, if you've been hanging on to your money or feel like, why would I ever give it to a church? A couple reasons. One, it's because you believe in the vision, because you're on board with what's going on, and that's part of what it means to be on board. Another one is because you're trusting your whole life to Jesus and that. Abby and I have sought to do that since we got married, and from day one we decided whatever my salary was, whatever we made before taxes in a given year, we would just divide that. We would take 10% of that, and we would divide that by 12 and give that regular amount each and every month. We got to Mosaic, and we were here about 4 or 5 years and decided that's not even showing up on our radar. It's just habitual. It's just regular. We don't even think about it. We don't feel it. It's the first thing on our list, on our budget. It's the first check that goes out in a month. It's like it doesn't even exist. And so we moved from 10% to 11%, just 1%, but we began to feel it because that money that we had been using and spending all of a sudden was going to giving. And then a couple years after that, we decided to give to a couple people that we believe in the Christian parachurch ministry that they're a part of. And that was another 1% of our annual income. And then over the last couple years, Abby started working as a nurse. And so we've made more money than we've ever made in our life, which is just tons and tons. And no, it's plenty for what we need. It really is. And we've grown our giving, and we give now that 11 plus 1% that's increased as she's made money. And we give away 12% of what we make combined before taxes in a year. And we feel it, and we look at the number and know we could spend it other places. And we love and enjoy, and it's a gift to be able to give. I don't know that that's your exact story or even that it needs to be. But it needs to be part of your life that you're trusting God with your money. And so the regular encouragement is to have that conversation if you're married with the person you're married with, and that that's a combined decision. If you're single, that you process that with God and somebody else, maybe. But that you give on a regular basis what God's calling you to give, and that God grows us as a church in our generosity. Here's what I want you to do. I'm sorry for going so long. You're playing very nice, Alex. That sounds wonderful. Do this. Take the card. Take a minute to fill it out. And then Alex is going to prompt you when it's time. And we're going to sing. And then you can drop that in a basket when it goes around in just a moment. But let me pray for us. And then we'll sing one last song and finish our time together. Actually, as I pray too, listen, if you have not RSVP'd to tonight, tonight's going to be a key moment for us to pray these things forward and trust God as he leads us. And so our partner and friends party, our vision and worship nights, it's tonight. I don't know where we're at in RSVPs, but go on there and hopefully there's still room and you can squeeze in and make it. Jesus, as we seek to hear your voice and have you lead us, would you direct us forward? Would you grow each and every one of us? Would we be a people, a church family who is gathered and on mission for you around our city? Would we look at those that are younger than us and be willing to invest and sacrifice in them for your good, for them, for the future? And would you grow us in our capacity to give and let go of what we so often hold on to too tightly to, our time, our abilities, our energy, and certainly our money. And would you own it all and use it all and work through it all?